It's a new day for every American. Start today right by getting facts and only facts at dnewman.org. Want the truth about today's important matters? Truth coming up. Here's Dan.
Welcome back to dnewman.org. It's time to start a new week, and boy, is this a big, big week. Today is Monday, June 11th. Lots going on. As everybody knows, the president is in Singapore meeting with the leader of North Korea, Kim Jong-un. And during this week, we are going to weigh in on all of the things that have happened there that have been discussed after they happened. There is so much noise going on in the mainstream media, even on conservative media outlets like Fox News, about what they think might happen, what they think the president should do, what Kim Jong-un's purpose might be, what are the North Koreans willing to give up. All of those kind of things ad nauseum being thrown at us. Folks, it really doesn't matter until it's done, whatever it is. And so as it's released to America and the rest of the world from this meeting, the details, good or bad, that have happened in these conversations between President Trump and Kim Jong-un, we will pass those along for you here at dnewman.org. Some other things of great importance in the news of late. A Senate staffer was revealed to be one of the culprits that has, through the years, been leaking all kinds of classified information to members of the press. And this information being released about this Senate staffer and the fact that the woman, his primary informant that he's been leaking to, a professional journalist that has worked for multiple outlets and currently at the New York Times, apparently they have a personal relationship, a romantic relationship, although they have declared after that was exposed, and the only reason they exposed that was apparently the Justice Department has seized much of her emails and text records over the last year or two, and did so several months ago. She failed to let her employer know that that happened. So there is a huge conversation going on among members of the press and the members of government regarding free press, and is it a government that's overreaching by seizing records, although the purpose for seizing those records was regarding the illegal, felonious release of classified information. Now, when that information is released to a journalist, the journalist is not guilty of a crime. The person who released the classified information is guilty of a crime. And so the cries about damaging free press and going against the First Amendment are abundant from the American press over this right now. We'll get into all of the outcome of that. And as more details are exposed during this week, we will be able to get away from the conjecture that is running rampant in the news media, because Big Brother's looking down their throats and reading their mail and listening to their phone calls and their emails. Welcome to our world, huh? I mean, come on. Donald Trump called it wiretapping, but it wasn't the old-time wiretapping, but definitely the Justice Department had, through that FISA warrant, got authorization to listen in on all things Donald Trump and his campaign. So it's happening to them, and it's happening to us. Welcome to our world. So what are we going to get in today? Something very, very important. It's very complicated, and let me tell you what it is first. It's a discussion of trade wars, a discussion of trade tariffs, and a discussion of trade deficits. Now, why is it such a big deal? You've heard about the G7 summit that was just completed in Canada. And if you heard about them, you probably heard that President Trump has just galled all of the other six leaders with various things that he said during the G7 about the imbalance of trade, the penalties that the U.S. has been paying for years and years and years because of continually being in a trade disadvantage with its trade partners. Well, let's define those three things. What is a trade deficit, first of all? It's defined as the amount in dollars by which the cost of a country's imports exceed the value of its exports. Now, imports are those things that we need and we don't have them created, produced domestically here in the United States. So we have to go get them from other countries. Or maybe we could get them from internal sources in the United States, but it's more cost effective for us to get them from other countries. So we import from those countries those goods and products into the United States. So we have to pay for them. And as they come in, of course, who pays for them? American consumers, American companies. It may be materials, maybe steel, aluminum. It may be cars. It can be a lot of things that we get from other countries. But we buy it and we pay. Now, internally, we create a lot of goods and products that other countries want to purchase from us for a multitude of reasons. So when they buy them from us, they're doing the same thing we're doing. When we bring or buy their products in, they are importing those into their country. It's called an export for us. We're exporting our goods and products out of our country. We're selling them to them. The deficit comes in when we are buying more from other countries than other countries are buying from us. And so that creates, when we're in that scenario, when the United States is and has been in a trade deficit scenario for a number of years. In fact, the month of February, it was $62 billion. In other words, we bought more products from other countries, $62 billion worth, than we sold to other countries. Some people think that can be good. Some people can think it is bad. A lot of reasons, a lot of justification, and we're not going to get into that necessarily. But what the quandary is with our partners, with the other countries around the world, we want them to buy more from us than they are right now of goods and products. And when they don't, that means we are buying more than we are selling. So when we are selling, who is actually selling? And this is where the rubber meets the roads. Who's selling? American companies, American small companies, big companies. They're selling the products, the goods, the services that they create and generate to other countries. Rather than us buying the same goods, products, and services from those or other countries. So the fact that we are not selling but buying more means our checkbook is in the red. So what do? The perfect scenario, in fact, Donald Trump, who has been just getting railed against by the press since the G7 summit, has the perfect plan. And he brought it up to those leaders after they were beating him up because of tariffs. And we're going to talk about tariffs in just a second. The perfect plan is just everybody buy what you want from whoever you want to buy it from. Why would you buy it from us in the United States if you can produce it at the same quality, at the same price or less in your own country? And the same applies to us. Why would we buy good services and products from other countries if we can produce them here as good a quality or better at a better price? And so that is the perfect scenario. So why isn't that playing out? And it's pretty obvious. Every country doesn't produce, for a multitude of reasons, everything that they need for their population to survive. And there are hundreds of thousands of categories of goods and services and products that are imported and exported around the world. Some countries can't grow certain things that are necessary for diet. Some countries don't have the elements in the ground to produce some of the things that they need for their countries to operate. And so you throw all of that in a big basket, and you call that your export products, what you want if you're any country, any country's companies and individuals, any country's governments, is you want to sell more of your stuff than you're buying other countries' stuff. It makes sense. You don't want your checkbook to be in the red. So here's where it gets sticky. governments came up with a grand idea of leveling the playing field. And how do you do that? Listen closely. I'm going to explain this, and it's very simple, and you'll hear all kinds of complicated examples and definitions of this from people. They want to make it very complicated, more than it is. It's pretty simple. If you're the Chinese and you don't produce something that the United States does, or you produce it but the United States is cheaper and you're going to import it into your country, you want your people to buy the same product in your country, even though you can't produce it there as inexpensively as the United States. So how do you level the playing field? How do you get your people to buy your product rather than the product, the same product that's generated from the United States? You put a tariff on it. So what does that do? The United States produces it at $1, let's just say, and it's exported to China. And China's not going to sell it to their people that are going to put it on their grocery food store shelves for a dollar. They're going to put a tariff on it because it costs more to provide the Chinese product that's the same. For instance, let's say it's a gallon of milk. United States sends a gallon of milk to China and we charge a dollar. Well, that same gallon of milk that's made by a cow in China costs $2. So what's Chinese government going to do? They're going to charge a $1 tariff on that U.S. milk gallon that goes over there. So there's no advantage to buy the U.S. gallon when it costs the same as that $2 gallon of Chinese milk. Who gets that dollar? The Chinese government. And so it gets really ridiculous. Since we're talking about milk, let me give you an example. Wisconsin, known for its dairy farming, known for producing milk. Wisconsin, as you know, geographically, is right across the border from the Canadians. The Canadian government wants Canadians to buy and drink and use Canadian milk, but it costs more to produce up there than it does in Wisconsin. And so what do? Those Wisconsin dairy farmers that want to export their milk products to Canada, just a few miles away, they sell it into Canada for X dollar. Let's just use that same example, a gallon of milk for a dollar. Canada puts a 240% tariff on that gallon of milk at the grocery store. Instead of costing a dollar, it cost $1 plus 240% tariff, $2.40. It costs $3.40 for a gallon of milk. And so that $3.40 gallon of Wisconsin milk in Canada, sitting right next to it, is a Canadian gallon of milk that costs $3. Which one are you going to buy? You're going to pay 40 cents less and buy the Canadian gallon. So what does that do? It hurts the exporting. It lowers the exports. And so Canada benefits because they're selling their own milk. The Wisconsin dairy farmer is producing milk cheaper, but the Canadian government is charging more. Who gets that extra money? The Canadian government. Who does it hurt? The Wisconsin dairy farmer. It's the same thing, folks, for steel, for aluminum, for cars. Do you think that when you buy a Mercedes that's produced in Germany, do you think there's not a tariff placed on that? The U.S. government puts a tariff on it. When it comes over at X dollars, let's say it's $10,000, it's not going to go to the dealer at $10,000. The U.S. government charges a tariff. Why? They would rather we don't buy Mercedes, that we buy Fords or Chryslers or Chevrolets. It makes sense, folks, but why not just do this? And this is the Donald Trump answer that he rolled out at the G7. Why not just do away with tariffs totally and let the free market world economy determine who produces what, who buys it, and based on supply and demand, what it costs. Let me tell you how that works. And let me tell you how we got to where we're going right now and where we've been for a while. It's because everybody wants an edge. Everybody wants to make more, and everybody wants to spend less money doing it. And so let's talk about our process here in the United States, and it's just the exact same, maybe on a little different scale, but very similar overseas. We build cars. We build a lot of cars and trucks, and we love to sell them to ourselves. And so in that process through the years, the production of automobiles, with all of its stuff thrown in, its changes, its improvements, its regulations, the cost of actual production of that car, creation of that car, has gone up exponentially. What has made it go up in price? Well, you know, innovations on cars, environmental improvements, more options on the car. It gets more powerful. It's more luxurious. All of those things go into the cost of the car. But what's the big cost increase in production of an automobile? Years and years ago, labor unions came into being in the United States to protect American workers. There were horrible working conditions in factories all over the United States, and people were treated like cattle. They were absolutely, definitely necessary. Somebody would come in, would represent those workers, would go to the owners, the management, the companies, and would negotiate for better working conditions, better pay, and to really get a fair pay for an honest day's worth of work. They were absolutely necessary. And there are millions of people who are members of unions to this day still. The reason for unions has changed. Unions took on a life of their own. They don't just work for employees to get better working conditions and better pay. They've created a financial economic opportunity for the members, the management of the unions, and they've created a situation of power. In the United States, labor unions have amassed massive power politically. And so it's for other reasons. But here's what happens when at a General Motors assembly plant in Shreveport, Louisiana, that's closed now, 15 years ago, the guy that cleaned the bathrooms had a big title because of the labor unions. With overtime, the guy that basically mopped floors, cleaned commodes, made sure there was clean toilet paper in there, emptied the waste baskets, could make $100,000 a year in Shreveport, Louisiana. Why? Because as part of negotiation of an assembly plant labor contract to get other benefits and other things agreed to in that contract, General Motors had to agree to pay that position that amount of money. Now, who pays that? Whoever buys that car. Why would they pay that? Because the price of the car goes up. Now, think about it. 25, 30 years ago, I remember when there have always been import cars in the United States on the road, but they were very rare. I think the first company that really came in with a bang was Toyota back in the 70s. And it was amazing when they came in because their cars were different, but they were kind of cool. And they were much less expensive than American cars. And so all of a sudden, the eyes began to open up in the United States of big automakers and the government and labor unions that, hey, this is going to be dangerous to us because we don't want Americans to buy Toyotas. We want Americans to buy Chrysler, Ford, General Motors. We don't want them to buy Mercedes. We don't want them to buy BMW or Toyota or Mazda or any of the foreign makes. We want them to buy all American. Well, the cost is always a major consideration on a major purchase. And so labor unions, with all of their amassed power, rather than go to their union members, the people that were paying union dues to them and they were supposedly representing, instead of going to them and saying, hey guys, we got a problem here, we're going to start losing business to Toyota and Mazda and all the other imports because they're producing vehicles that are as good or better than ours and they're cheaper. So what we've got to do is come up with a way to level the playing field. What's the easiest way to do it? Let's charge them tariffs. Let's make it cost more for them. And that's how it works. Tariffs, and there are other things that happen there. Export subsidies. And I don't want to get into all kind of detail, but export subsidies are government payments to a producer in that country that reduces production cost, and that lets that domestic producer in that country to charge a lower price when they ship it overseas. So unions would come in and go to the federal government and say, why don't we subsidize Ford Motor and Chrysler and General Motors and give them money across the board? So what they can do is deduct that from the cost of producing the cars that they're going to sell overseas. What does that do? Well, it costs us, the taxpayers who pay to the government, for them to pay those subsidies, it costs us more, and it makes our trade deficit go up. It's crazy, folks, how this happens. How could it be resolved? If we could find a way, just like the president suggested in Canada, if we could find a way to really level the playing field, how are we going to do that? Sit tight. That's just ahead at dnewman.org.
If your toddler falls in the pool, you think you'll hear this. But what you'll really hear is this. It happens quickly and silently. About 260 children younger than 5 drown in pools each year. That's about 1 nursery school class each month. Put a fence around your pool. Place an alarm on doors leading to the pool area. For more pool safety tips, visit the U.S. Consumer Product Safety Commission website at cpsc.gov.
My son Casey was a bright, fearless 20-year-old with a boundless future ahead of him. But in the blink of an eye, he was gone. While out riding a skateboard, Casey fell. He was not wearing a helmet. Our whole family wishes he was. It could have saved his life. I'm Captain Kevin Raffelli of the San Mateo Police Department. Parents, encourage your kids to strap on a helmet every time they jump on a bike, scooter, or skateboard. Think of my son Casey and use your head. Put a helmet on. It could save your life.
A message from the Consumer Product Safety Commission.
Not just political, not just lifestyle, but always relevant. See and hear it first at dnewman.org.
Trade deficits and tariffs, that's what we're discussing today. How can we level the playing field? It's real simple, folks. Let every nation, every government in every nation, let's don't charge any tariffs. Let's make the marketplace be exactly what it is. No export subsidies, no import quotas, no voluntary export restrictions. You can only ship this many gallons of milk to us this next month. Take all that away and just make the playing field level. Let every country rise to the level of expertise that is necessary to induce other countries, and that means induce other people in other countries to want your goods and services because they're the best in the world, they're more economical than any other, and because they're readily available and the service for them is impeccable. How would that level the playing field? Because if you produce the best product, the best service, at the best price, everybody's going to want what you have. And it's happened again and again throughout the world. Excellence is rewarded with success. If you make the best widget at the best price, and it's easily available and it's easy to use, everybody wants to buy your widget instead of the guy in the country down the street. And rather than any government put their finger on the trade balance, the trade scale, and try to bend it into their favor by putting tariffs on, by giving import quotas, export subsidies, any kind of restriction. Why would we want to import Chinese steel into the United States to build our buildings? We have amazing steel production capability. We were number one in the world for years and years and years. Why did we switch and start buying steel from China? Here's why. Labor unions drove the cost of producing American steel way, 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 way high. Not just labor unions. Environmental government guidelines and regulations made it much more expensive to produce that same steel. So in the marketplace, the world marketplace, when Germany needed more steel than they can produce in their country, or more different kinds or types of steel than they could produce in their countries, and they had been buying it from the United States for decades, all of a sudden, the Chinese come out there waving a little price tag saying, hey, we got the same product that you've been buying from the USA for decades, and it's 20% cheaper. Take away those regulations. Sometimes regulations are necessary, no doubt. And pay a fair wage. Believe me, you got to do that. But what is the incentive if business walks out the door and out the port to a country across the Pacific? If your business leaves there, why would you want to keep doing the same thing? Because you're going to all of a sudden be upside down. Your checkbook's going to be in the red. You don't want to keep throwing good money out there when it's not making you any profits. So what do? You shut down your steel mill. You find something else to do. Then all of a sudden, the Chinese are in the driver's seat. United States has to buy steel from somewhere else. Oh, there's a few specialty mills around that produce special kinds and special types for special niche markets in the United States for steel. Definitely there. But why would somebody who's building a building and they just need some steel girders, why would they buy it from a mill in the United States and pay 20 or 30% more when they can get the same product from China 20% cheaper? It's crazy. It's absolutely nuts. So what's happened through the years is the cost of producing goods and products in the United States, for a lot of reasons other than the actual cost that goes into it, have risen astronomically, and we can't compete. So that creates, and it's the same way in other countries around the world, folks, that creates tariffs, import and export quotas and subsidies for exports and voluntary export restrictions, trying to make it so everybody has to buy a little bit more from that country and a little bit less from the other country, which always puts somebody at a disadvantage. And here's the thing that Donald Trump promised when he was campaigning, and here's why. He wanted to reduce our trade deficit. And what does that mean? It means exactly what we were talking about here. How do you do it? Exactly how we're discussing this issue today. Level the playing field, get rid of tariffs, but every country has to do it. That's why when he threw that idea out at the G7 summit, of the seven leaders there, he was the only one that liked it. Nobody else wants to do it. Why? Because for decades, folks, the United States has been carrying the lion's share of the cost for the world of trade deficits. We've been big brother in so many ways. And let me ask you this. How much extra money do you and your family have now to throw down the drain when, if the same product was produced here in the United States around the corner from your house at the same price, and it was just as good as that product that you're having to buy now that was made in China, would you buy it from the United States? Maybe it was a nickel cheaper. Surely you would, but it's not. And we can get back to that by leveling the playing field. And so President Trump, he went out, he started telling other countries, we're going to put tariffs on your goods and products because you're putting tariffs on our goods and products. And they get mad and they scream and holler about it. But guess what? They've all been coming back to the table after all the screaming and hollering, and they're saying, hey, we want to work with you on that. And so they start working on reduction of tariffs. It's working, folks. It's called negotiation. It's called business. It's called having a guy in the White House as president that understands what business is and how it works and how to make a deal. He's doing it. Thank you so much for joining us today for the discussion on trade deficit, and tariffs. I hope you know a little more now than you did before. And I want to thank you again for listening in. We really appreciate you joining us daily. And be back tomorrow at dnewman.org.
Just because you think something's right doesn't mean it's right. Just because you think something's wrong doesn't mean it's wrong. But always get the truth about right and wrong here at dnewman.org.